good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 12, 2017. The IGAD heads of states are meeting in Addis Ababa without President Salva Kiir.
You could tell that the meeting was called for because of the concerns, security concerns, based on the recent advancement and escalation of fighting. And that is very straightforward point that has been blamed on the SPLM-IO led by Dr. Riad.
And at least one member of the National Dialogue Steering Committee says the committee is too bloated with people and it's hard to get anything done.
This could have been done maybe by about 20 people of some experience in these matters, and that would have been much more quicker. I raise the point that the committee was too wieldy for the mandate given to it.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We first go to Addis Ababa, where the IGAD heads of states are meeting in an extraordinary summit to discuss the worsening humanitarian situation in South Sudan. South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, is leading a government delegation at the meeting. The spokesman in the office of Taban Dengai, Chol Lam, says IGAD leaders are concerned about the escalation of fighting in South Sudan and the slow implementation of the August peace deal.
As we're speaking now, the open session has ended, and now the closing session is in progress at the moment, and they're deliberating the issue of South Sudan. A number of statements have been given by head of state in the open session, as well as donor community, and over all of them, it focused on how do we progress and support peace agreement. Of course, the government gave a very detailed report on the progress and its side of the implementation. I would like to note that the government delegation might seem large, but it's representative of all the political parties that are part of the Transition Government of National Unity. And it was a deliberate move by the government to show that we are open. Even the closed session has been attended by a number of the political parties. It is an open process. And the Transition Government of National Unity came here as one to support the peace agreement.
What other political parties in Addis Ababa attending the meeting that you're talking about?
The political parties that are represented within the Transitional Government of National Unity. So you have the former DCNUs are represented, other political parties are represented, SPLM DC is also represented, and SPLM-IO and SPLM in government. So this composes the members of the Transitional Government of National Unity. And they're all represented, and they're all inside the closed meeting at the moment.
The SPLM-IO is divided into two. There is the IO loyal to Machar, and there's IO loyal to Taban Dengai. Which IO is attending the meeting in Addis Ababa?
So SPLM-IO is part of the government, which is the partner in peace. And that's the SPLM-IO headed by Taban Dengai, is represented in the hall.
Apart from the issues that were raised in the meeting, what is the mood at the meeting? How would you gauge the mood?
You know, you could tell that the meeting was called for because of the concerns. And of course, there's security concerns based on the recent advancement and escalation of fighting. And that is very straightforward point that has been blamed on the SPLM-IO led by Dr. Riad. That has been a clear indication in the meeting that there's a grief concern. And also, they, you know, fair enough to say that there was also a question from the international community regarding the humanitarian access, which the government has gave a full report on. Of course, South Sudan is a vast country. We could only report on what we know. So if there's any impediment that has been done on humanitarian access, that could be a question that the two SPLM-IO led by Dr. Riad. From our part, we have already explained that situation to the international community and also our partners, the IGAD, who brokered the peace agreement.
Yes. Let's talk about the meeting that is going on right now, the closed-door meeting of all the political parties that you're talking about. What are they discussing?
There's concerns from the IGAD community. And the concerns are the humanitarian situation, the security situation, the implementation of the peace agreement in fullness, the deployment of RPF. These are part of the agenda, as well as the national reconciliation process that has been declared by the government. The IGAD as a community is concerned. And their concern is focused on these two, but also they want to see how they could support the people, you know, a little bit more. The closed session would be a very frank session. And the deliberation will, I think, will come out with a very positive communique that will show that despite the challenges that the government is facing, the famine, the economic situation, there will be an overwhelming support from IGAD. We also call for an inclusive national dialogue. An inclusive process must be transparent and inclusive.
IGAD could be speaking with one voice, but the South Sudanese are not speaking with one voice. For instance, the issue of the national dialogue, the message that has been getting out of Juba is that leader of the SPLM-IO, Riek Machar, is not invited to attend the national dialogue. Now, IGAD is saying it should be inclusive. Correct. How do you react to that?
The IGAD supports institutions and not individuals. It could be translated the same way in pertaining of Dr. Riek Machar's presence. Dr. Riek Machar is more than welcome to send delegates, to send representatives, to send anybody, and that person will be protected, assured, and given and facilitated by the government and by the committee of the National Dialogue to make sure that they participate open and freely. Now, if it's about him personally, that goes against what IGAD just mentioned, that this is not a process to support individuals, but rather it's a process to support institutions. And if SPLM-IO, led by Dr. Riek, is an institution of itself, they could send their own representative.
That's Joel Lam, spokesman for South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai. Lam was speaking to me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, this past hour. A policy director with the Washington-based Enough Project says the IGAD summit on South Sudan presents an opportunity for the region to rethink what he calls the stagnant peace process. Brian Adeba, the rights group's associate director of policy, tells INBR the IGAD is falling short of its mission to promote and maintain peace and security in South Sudan.
No, it is not doing enough, mainly because it is divided. It is very divided. All the countries in the IGAD grouping have varying interests and competing interests among themselves with regard to South Sudan. And that competition has stymied any effective handling of the conflict in South Sudan.
John Prendergast, the Enough Project's founding director, writes that South Sudan needs a new dynamic an inclusive peace process. Was that not the vision of the August 2015 peace deal? What went wrong then that can be corrected in a new peace process?
Well, since the peace process stalled in August last year, in July last year, the inadvertent consequence of that collapse is the emergence of new actors in the conflict. Now, the emergence of the actors has worsened the humanitarian situation as well as exacerbated this fighting. When the peace agreement was signed, there was no conflict in Western Bahr Ghazal. There was no conflict in the Equatorius. Right now, those regions are aflame. And therefore, what is obvious here is that new actors have come into the conflict and they need to be accommodated at the negotiating table. This conflict is no longer a contest between two parties, and that has to be taken into consideration if at all the peace process is to move forward.
So how do you engage the new actors exactly?
By convening a conference that brings them to the table and asking what their grievances are and treating them as partners as well.
Now, Brian, you argue that people who have personally profited during the conflict have little to no incentive to negotiate in good faith. So with that in mind, how will a new process work if there's no motivation among leaders?
The lack of motivation here has to be addressed, and this is where the question of exerting leverage comes into play. And the best possible way to get at these people to sort of compel them to come to the negotiating table and talk in good faith is to enact punitive or pressures on them on the financial side, for instance. Make sure that you hit them in the wallet target their businesses, target their movement, target their networks, ensure that they are locked out of the global financial system. That's one. Secondly, a conflict proliferates because of the presence of arms, the wide availability of small arms. So the next level of exerting leverage should focus on an arms embargo that targets both sides on or all sides in this conflict so that no one has access to arms to enable them to continue fighting.
The peace process has largely been led by JMEC through IGAD, but at which point should the African Union step in to take a more direct role in South Sudan?
Well, the African Union has this perception or this policy where regional bodies take care of localized conflicts. For instance, if it's in East Africa, IGAD takes charge of that. But what we have seen now, IGAD is too divided to even take a very realistic approach to solving the conflict. Several things have happened also on the negotiating front. There was the Ethiopian foreign minister who was very engaged, but he resigned to go and compete for the World Health Organization top position. The successor is not as plugged in on South Sudanese affairs. And frankly, he also came in at a time when there were so many pressing domestic issues to address on the home front. So the attention that IGAD should have focused on South Sudan has been diverted. And that needs to be addressed. And that's why we say instead of letting IGAD take the lead, some organization or some outfit within the African Union or the United Nations should take charge right now, because what we've seen is inaction, and that inaction has resulted in more deaths and destruction in South Sudan, and this situation is untenable and should not continue.
That's Brian Adeba, Associate Director of Policy at the Enough Project. He was speaking to Ayen Bior from Washington. A member of the South Sudan's National Dialogue Steering Committee says the body has grown so large that it's difficult to get all 90-plus members to agree on an agenda. John Luke says they are discussing security, the economy, and the root causes of the conflict, among other issues. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Members of the National Dialogue Steering Committee have convened several meetings over the past 3 weeks in an effort to prepare for dialogue conferences expected to begin soon. Luke says the committee has three main objectives right now.
Do consultation, identify the stakeholders that are supposed to participate in the main dialogue conference, and also to set up the agenda or to propose an agenda which it can now submit.
The committee has identified stakeholders to participate in the dialogue, including the legislative and executive branches of government, the main opposition groups, and internally displaced persons and refugees residing in neighboring countries. Luke says the steering committee should be smaller.
This could have been done maybe by about 20 people of some experience in these matters. And that would have been much more quicker. I raised the point that the committee was too wieldy for the mandate given to it.
Abraham Awalich, a member of the National Dialogue Secretariat, argues that the size of the steering committee is not the issue.
They are using the former 10 states as the basis of the 10 committees, and then another two committees based on the special administration areas, Abyei and Fibor. And then the three other committees, one is at the national level. We'll do consultation here in Juba, and then another committee will be dealing with refugees and diaspora. And then there will be a committee on security.
Jok says the different ideas brought up by steering committee members will ensure the agenda includes all issues affecting the people of South Sudan.
All those ideas will now become part of the agenda. Whether it is economy, whether it is the rule of law, whether it is security, sector reform, whether it is what, whether it is ethnicity, whether it is issue identity, all the issues that are raised through this brainstorming, then they are presented.
Awalich says meetings were held over the past few weeks to iron out an agenda.
The whole idea is to begin to document what people think is the problem. And now these things can be presented when the committees come back from consultation. They will also bring similar views from the floor or from the ground. These things now will be developed and turned into an agenda.
The next task for the 15 subcommittees is to carry out grassroots consultations, which are expected to take place over the next 2 or 3 weeks. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
South Sudanese students studying in Uganda say they worry about their safety along the Juba-Nimule Road after last week's deadly attack that left 15 people dead, including a student traveling back home. The students say they cannot afford a $300 air ticket to Juba. They are urging the government and armed opposition forces to adhere to the unilateral ceasefire President Salva Kiir announced recently. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
And university students in Uganda are coming up on a 2-month long holiday. But last Thursday's death of a female South Sudanese student on the Juba-Nimule Road shocked many South Sudanese students and left them questioning whether they would make it home for a break. Moga Joseph, a student of procurement and logistics management at Kampala International University, knew the South Sudanese student killed in last week's attack.
When I heard about the incident, it really shocked me because one of my classmates was among the victims, which is not fair at all. All the leaders of tomorrow are being killed. Who will lead and rule the country in the future, since the young, upcoming, educated people are being murdered too?
Moga says he's one of many South Sudanese students in Uganda reconsidering his plans.
It is now very difficult for me to go to Juba for holiday nowadays, either on road or on air, since the security on Juba-Nimule Road has worsened due to this rampant attack on innocent passengers and civilians, giving me fear.
Moga also says the $300 airline ticket is too expensive for most students. Monica Mungudu, a student at the Kampala-based International University of East Africa, says she would like to go home but does not feel safe traveling by road.
It is very difficult to me because to access the road is not easy. I was in hostel and even I paid for hostel 4 months and it is over. Now it is a need for me to go back to my country. The life has become very difficult for me.
Arkangelo Akot, Information Minister for the South Sudanese Students Union in Uganda, condemned the deadly attacks on the Juba-Nimule Road.
This for sure is raising concerns and questions on whether the opposition is having the core values for fighting regime. During the time of Dr. John Garang, civilians were not killed.
Akot says students are not sure what to do this holiday season.
South Sudanese Students Union in Uganda condemns in strongest terms possible the attack on civilian vehicles which left many of them dead. This for sure is raising concerns and questions on whether the opposition is having the core values for fighting regime. During the time of Dr. John Garang, civilians were not killed, which did really help.
A court advises South Sudanese students in Uganda to stay put until security improves along the Juba-Nimule Highway. Moga is urging the international community to force South Sudanese warring parties to end the conflict.
The international community should not think that the current situation in South Sudan is of a joke, but to look into the issue as serious by letting the IGADs and other bodies to be focused rather than being double-minded and divided to restore quick peace in the country. We have suffered enough.
Brigadier General Daniel Justin, a spokesman of the South Sudan National Police Service, said up to 15 people were killed in last week's attack, including a colonel. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Arua, Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at a faction of SPLA-IO arriving in Yei to implement a controversial peace deal signed in Uganda. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today
Why should you care about your reputation?
Say, example, you get a gig, like for us decorators, when you get a gig from Parliament. If you have a bad reputation, of course you won't pass. But if you have a good reputation, you're honest, you're reliable, you know, you're flexible, then you can pass for that gig. So reputation is number one.
I care so much about my reputation because good name is better than riches. Once that is damaged, it's difficult to repair.
I think it's important for one to have a good reputation because it's through your reputation that people will give you respect, because when someone trusts you, then definitely you earn their respect.
That is all I have. If I don't have any reputation, I might as well walk on the streets virtually naked.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. An advanced team from a breakaway group of the SPLA-IO arrived in Yei town to implement a controversial peace deal signed with the government in Ugandan capital Kampala a week ago. Bishop Elias Taban of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church brokered the peace deal. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei.
The South Sudan government and SPLA-IO faction agreed to a ceasefire, commit to ending the conflict and allow free movement of citizens along the Yei-Kaya Road. The parties also agreed to conduct joint patrols along the Yei-Kaya Highway and to establish a contornment area for rebel fighters. Speaking in Yei over the weekend, Yoma Sebastian, head of the armed group's military advance team, says his group has distanced itself from the main SPLA-IO faction led by former first vice president Riek Machar.
When we all went from here to the bush, Riek did not support us. It was our own effort and we are not under Riek. So if there is somebody somewhere who doesn't still need peace, maybe we'll ask him kindly to just leave us a space in another corner, not in Yei River.
Yei River State Acting Governor Agustinio Kiri is asking residents to welcome home the IO forces under Yoma Sebastian. Kiri says the government and the armed opposition in Yei River State must both implement the peace deal.
I ask everyone here to look into these brothers as their own brothers. We are all Christians. We have that spirit of forgiveness. We need to throw away all our differences and work together for the common interest of our people. We bring on board those who are still not sure of this peace agreement. We want a peace for ourselves.
Richard Wheeler, an elder in Yei town, urges the two parties to implement a deal so the suffering of citizens can end.
Peace has already come to Yei. Therefore, I'm asking our people, those who remain behind, let them join their brothers, so that we all march together as sons and the daughters of Yei River State.
Bishop Elias Taban, who mediated the deal, says he will monitor the implementation of the peace agreement.
The role of EPC will not only end up with the mediation, as spelled on this document. We are going to be a part monitors of the implementation of the agreement. I strongly believe that Yei River State will be a model for the rest of Southern Sudan. We are prepared, and as per this agreement, we believe that by the end of next week, Yei Kaya Road has to be opened.
Colonel Lampole, deputy military spokesman of the SPLA-IO faction, lied to Mr. Machar, issued a statement last week dismissing the Kampala peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin.
The Civil Society Network, an umbrella group of local non-governmental organizations, is suspending one of its member organizations, the Imatong State Youth Union, after it called for removal of Imatong's governor. The head of the Civil Society Network says the network is giving the youth union the boot because it engaged in partisan politics. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
In April, the Imatong State Youth Union wrote a letter to President Salva Kiir asking him to remove the newly appointed governor of Imatong State, Tobiolo Alberio Oromo. It is not clear if President Kiir received the letter. The youth union accused Governor Oromo of intimidating people, creating disunity, and inciting hatred among citizens. They also accused Oromo of ordering the burning of farms of innocent civilians last December. Oromo strongly denies the accusations.
When we were meeting, I was told that we heard that you are intimidating people. I say no, I'm intimidating cattle raiders. The bandits who are robbing people along the road, these are the people I am intimidating.
The Civil Society Network announced the indefinite suspension of the Imatong State Youth Union yesterday at a news conference in Torit. Civil Society Network Chairman Charles Okulu says The youth union's call to remove the governor was purely political.
The content of the petition is purely political and partisan in nature. Therefore, it undermines the principle of neutrality in the work of the civil society organization. Two, your petition letter demands for the change of leader, but in our principle as civil society, we do not demand for the change of the leaders, but we advocate for the change of policies that favors everybody in Emotong State.
Okulu says the suspension of the group should serve as a lesson to other groups and activists who try to hide under the title of civil society organization to achieve their political goals.
We are not supposed to speak the language of a political party. We are not supposed to go political on air. We are only supposed to advocate for the change of good policies that favors everybody. That is the cardinal principle that we are always moving.
Orupi David Oyuech, vice president of the Emotong State Youth Union, says his group would have preferred to be given a chance to talk about the issue before being suspended from the network.
They don't have any prerogative to suspend the youth union. They are supposed to come and meet us if there are some areas where they want to share with us. Then they're supposed to come, we sit, then we talk, and then we harmonize and see what we'll do next.
Emotong State Women's Association Chairperson Angelina Bernardino calls the youth union suspension is very unfortunate. But speaking in Arabic, she says the youth union leaders must learn to remain neutral on politics. Bernardino says if the youth union is engaging in politics, then it does not belong to a civil society, because the civil society is always advocating for the rights of the citizens who are not siding and does not side with any political interests. Emotong State Youth Union President Loki Stephen says all matters regarding the letter his group wrote demanding Governor Oromo's removal have been resolved.
The letter has been written and it was rejected. It went to the governor, and that's why we went to the governor's office and completed with him. And that's why we are here in Juba. We came to the National Youth Union to handle the same issue. I don't know what transpired again to the civil society that they are stopping the activities or the reaction or interreaction. One thing is, we are not under the civil society. The Emotong State Youth Union is just an independent body in the state.
Stephen is advising Emotong State youth to remain calm and says he hopes the row between his group and the civil society network will die down. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Tori.
That's our show for this Monday. We now take you to Yambio with a song from MJ Yore. The title is Yangada Gadia.
Use ngeji para kabor. Voilà. Menina tani yapa. Menina tani yapa emi. Menina vumuririza.
Kuro ya pasa konda koro. Kamu pingo kumba koro te. Kamfura ye biko. Unikato na kina guapanga mina waka wakare me. Muyebile mini melekwa jere yo. Ini kiti wala gafare. Minye fora kacha mama mama.
We have been listening to MEJ with that song Yangada Gadia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.